Ladies and gentlemen, live from the West Coast, it's time for Ring Talk Live Worldwide. Your inside look into combat sports.
You know what? As long as she fights 135 pounds, I don't care if she's injecting a horse demon into her eyeballs.
And now, the host of the longest running fight show in radio and internet history.
But I want to start getting paid. I want to start making heavyweight money.
Pedro Fernandez.
You know, just excited. Just excited to be back. I wish we could do a fight every night. You know me, Pedro.
Damas y caballeros, bienvenidos, ladies and gentlemen, welcome to the Sports Byline Broadcast Network. My name is Pedro Fernandez, and yes, this is Ring Talk Live Worldwide. Often imitated, but never duplicated. Bottom line is we've been kicking ass 37 plus years now. Welcome to the longest running fight show in history, Ring Talk Live Worldwide. Once again, my name is Pedro Fernandez. In this hour, of course, we're talking boxing and mixed martial arts. We'll bring in boxing, P-H-E, that's P, little H, and a D. I'm talking about Socrates Palmer. He'll be here in a couple of minutes. Of course, we are just hours away from the welterweight showdown. Kell Brook coming to us from the U.K., unbeaten lad for a while there until he stepped up to middleweight, an ill-advised move on my part. I said, man, if he goes up to 160, he can get really hurt, moving up 13 pounds. He did. He did get really hurt, had a couple of facial bones broken. Of course, came back, had one more fight after that, lost to Errol Spence. Bottom line is, he's not looking this good coming in as a 4-1 underdog tonight against Terrence Crawford. Of course, Omaha, Nebraska. Omaha, Nebraska's only star. Bottom line is, he's undefeated, but he's not a superstar. You've got to do something. You've got to have people on your resume worthy of the Hall of Fame, I think, before you can enter the Hall of Fame. Bottom line is, Terrence Crawford is not there yet, and he knows it. Ryan Garcia in the news this week. Lion Luke Campbell, of course, not being able to come across the pond and fight for that fight December the 5th. Of course, they were going to hook it up for 12 rounds down there in L.A., I think, at one of the Fox studios or some kind of studio. And the bottom line is, the fight's not going to take place. And at the end of the day, Ryan Garcia and Luke Campbell will hook it up in January. You are tuned to Ring Talk Live Worldwide. Next up, boxing's PhD Socrates Palmer on Ring Talk Live Worldwide. Daddy bringing us to the break. Of course, him and Sting getting together, honoring the great Puff Daddy. I'm Puff Daddy. A notorious B.I.G. Why am I skipping on this one? Bottom line is, this is Ring Talk Live Worldwide. You're inside looking to the world of boxing and MMA. Of course, coming to you live from the city by the bay, San Francisco, California. You know, having grown up in an era where welterweight names were like Thomas Hearns and who I thought was the best of them all, believe it or not. I thought he was better than Ray Leonard. I thought that the fight with Sugar Ray, of course, and Tommy Hearns that went down September of 1981. I thought that fight should have went the other way. What I mean by that is, had Tommy been the hitman, had he merely came out and tried to hurt Ray Leonard, that fight would have been over with in like 3 or 4 rounds. Instead, he came out and tried to box Ray Leonard psychologically. He, like Marvin Hagler did the same thing. He came out and tried to outbox. You don't outbox Sugar Ray. He doesn't have that name for nothing. I mean, he wasn't saccharine. This is the real deal. Okay. You don't outbox Sugar Ray, but all these guys tried to outbox Sugar Ray. And of course, Tommy Hearns tried it for 6 rounds and was doing pretty good until the 6th round, until he got his rib cracked by a body shot. And that was, the fight was basically went the other way from that point forward. Of course, Hearns would lose in the 14th round. Referee Davey Pearl would stop it. Now, those are two of the greatest welterweights of all night, maybe number one and number two, as I don't rate Sugar Ray Robinson as a welterweight. Still, you've got welterweights today that are unbeaten. But are they great? I mean, unbeaten doesn't get you in the Hall of Fame, or does it, today's boxing world? Is the boxing world that diluted in today's world of 4 or 5 different champions, of course, with sanctioning bodies going crazy? All right, is the boxing world that deluded that we can look at some of these fighters and say they're great even though they haven't beat a great fighter yet? Okay. For that point, we'll bring in, get a question and an answer. We'll bring in boxing's PhD. I'm talking about Socrates Palmer coming to us from the Bronx. Soc, can you be a great fighter, a Hall of Fame fighter, and not beat a Hall of Fame fighter?
That's a good question. You know what? the Hall of Fame in boxing, I'm not as stringent, like the way I am with like other sports, just for the fact that 90% of the fighters, years after they're stopped fighting, I mean, they don't have much. And if you could, kind of give them that moniker of Hall of Famer and they could make some money afterwards, so I'm not as strict, but that's not answering your question, I'm sorry. I would say it depends how you do it. It depends how you do it because, I mean, Benito Lopez, right? Who jumps out on his, there's no Hall of Fame. Yeah, he's considered
one guy that does jump out on his resume, Rosendo Alvarez, beat him.
There you go. The one guy that stands out is the one fight that he probably got a gift. I may give him some heat. I got into a debate with a good friend of mine, Scott Schaefer, once. Jeff Fennec. Is Jeff Fennec a Hall of Famer? Arturo Gatti. I guess you can. It depends on the intangibles that you bring in the ring. Those guys like Fennec, Gatti, they gave 100%. Guys that were ballsy, great TV fighters, and had personas outside of the ring. So I would probably lean yes.
Fennec did some Flintstone vitamins, some early versions of Flintstone vitamins, and I think that sort of like when he couldn't recover, his body broke down and that was it. Bottom line is Jeff Fennec, though, a great guy. Just for a second there, talk about a guy that went to Vegas and got a blackjack and ended up losing the hand. Of course, I'm talking about, I think it was that June of 1989 card against Azuma Nelson. I think it was on the Ray Leonard, Tommy Hearns undercard. And, Azuma Nelson came in and he got beat. I mean, he said he had this. I don't care what kind of excuses you're talking about. But the bottom line is Jeff Fennec won that fight going away that night and they called it a draw. And I was with Fennec after the fight and I could see that his heart was broken. And there was nothing, I don't think there was anything ever that could fill that void in his heart at that point in time. I mean, Saki had to be there to see it, man. It was like, and then of course he never messed around with drugs before that. And then anyway, bottom line is it turned his life into a downward spiral, getting a 17 when he should have been a 21.
Yeah. I mean, that's the side, people, scream bloody murder when there's a bad decision and we're all pissed off, but psychologically it's the damage it does to a fighter. Sometimes, people have no idea the effort that takes in, that a fighter puts his body through in camp, the sacrifices he makes, from his family and his personal. I mean, think about not having sex. Who doesn't like having sex? Like abstinence alone. I mean, and dieting and just the training and then to get, to leave it all in the ring and then to get screwed at the end. A lot of guys recover. Some guys do. Marvin Hagler won. I believe he was, he got screwed in the first time he went for a title, but he recovered. Pernell Whitaker, his first loss to Jose Luis Ramirez. So the great ones do recover, but for others, you really have to have a tough mindset, to go forward after that.
Frankie Randall, yeah. Look what happened to him. He beats Chavez in his prime and then ends up getting the shaft in a rematch. They ended up calling some type of butt. They pulled in some WBC rule where they took a point away from him because the other guy was cut. And I mean, it was ridiculous. And they're going, man, what's going on? And of course, Frankie sort of fell by the wayside as well. In other words, I can't get it across via the radio or even in person, the feeling of what it's like to take the elevator to the penthouse and then realize you're in the outhouse. I mean, it's the worst feeling in the world. I mean, I remember one time we were in Richmond, California, and I beat this guy almost to death. Okay? Almost to death. And I mean, it was bad. I was saying to myself, man, I was feeling bad. Hit him with these body shots. I could hear, he was like, whoa. So they gave him the fight. They gave him the fight on the split decision. I was like mind boggled, man. But I went home that night. It was like that was the first time I'd ever got shafted. I went home that night and I cried. I couldn't believe it. And then when we looked at the videotape later, my coach had the videotape. I looked at the videotape. I won every round clearly. You know what I'm saying? But because I guess I had a style that worked the body, and I was working body shots, maybe the judges didn't like that. But at the end of the night, I went home and I cried. I was a grown man, man.
Listen, people think there's politics in professional boxing. Amateur boxing, oh, my God. You have no idea who's, you know, whose nephew you're fighting, you know? It's like, it's the best way I could say is I remember Emmanuel Stewart said on the broadcast, every fight should end in a knockout.
Okay.
And in some instances, you better hope the ref knows how to count to 10, you know, so.
That's a good point. We're talking about Boxing's True PhD. I'm talking about Socrates Palmer coming to us, of course, from the Bronx. Well, I guess we might as well touch on the subject just for a second. How's New York City handling this latest COVID surge?
Well, you know what? Right now, it's kind of just wait and see. The mayor, de Blasio, said that that they may really wait to the very last minute to decide if schools are going to go completely remote. That's kind of where everyone's kind of looking towards. Recently, yesterday, Friday, everything at 10 o'clock that's deemed non-essential is supposed to close. So bars, restaurants. So, you know, it seems like they're handling it the same way that they did a few months ago when the pandemic first hit. But what I'm noticing is there's more resistance. I think people are starting to kind of question whether or not it's proper prevention. Like, you know, we did it once, the numbers go up. Is it the right solution? So you see more resistance from people, and not just people in the media, social media, just regular folks. You know, you see them in the gym, people that own businesses. They're not, you know, taking kindly to it.
But they didn't do it. But here's what's up. If you didn't do it right the first time, what are you trying to you know what I'm saying? It wasn't done right the first time. I think only half the country shut down the first time and didn't even half the country go to a mask initially. The bottom line is, you know, we need to come together and do things as a whole, or at least as a giant majority. I mean, good Lord, man. Anyway, we change subjects back to the sport of boxing. The bottom line is COVID's here and it's here to stay. You are tuned to Ring Talk Live Worldwide, your inside look into the world of boxing, MMA. Of course, this is the Saturday edition, of course, that features boxing's true PhD, Mr. Socrates Palmer of the Bronx. We call him the Bronx Bomber. Bottom line is he's knocking out all bums every Saturday here on Ring Talk Live Worldwide. Open phone lines around the planet. You can join us if you dare. 1-800-878-7529. That's 1-800-878-7529. Or get this. You can text us here in the studio, the guilt-free text line, the number 1-415-275-1613. That's 1-415-275-1613. You are tuned to Ring Talk Live Worldwide, baby.
What do you think of him as a fighter, huh?
Well, his footwork's lousy. He can't counter punch. His timing stinks. And he doesn't breathe properly.
But you like him as a person.
Well, he has a nice smile.
Now, more of Ring Talk with Pedro Fernandez.
Well, you have to talk to my lawyer on that one.
Check it. You are tuned to Ring Talk Live Worldwide, 26 minutes past hour. This is the Saturday show, of course, live on Sports Byline, iHeartRadio, Sirius XM, Satellite Radio, Channel 211, and like 1,000 other internet platforms. Or you can listen to this in a podcast form. Of course, there's 1,000 different areas, 1,000 different places on the web where our podcast is. But the bottom line is we have a great podcast at Anchor.com. You are tuned, Anchor.fm. You are tuned to Ring Talk Live Worldwide. You're inside looking to the world of boxing, MMA. In just a few hours, of course, at the, of course, they call it the bubble. Of course, Las Vegas, Nevada, no longer having big-time arenas. This fight would have probably had maybe 8,000 to 10,000 people to come see it. Maybe if they priced it right. I'm talking about, of course, Terrence Crawford, undefeated Omaha, Nebraska, good-looking fighter. Of course, he's won the weight classes at 131 titles, 135, 140, and now 147 pounds. But he looks a bit small next to Kell Brook. Of course, Kell Brook, a welterweight title holder at one point in time that stepped up to 160, an ill-advised move. Of course, but he made some money, stepped him up, made $1 million, got his face broken by Gennady Golovkin, the then world middleweight champion, came back to 147, lost a fight with Errol Spence. Of course, he's considered the best, allegedly, at 147. And now we have, of course, this welterweight showdown with Crawford and Kell Brook. Kell Brook, 38-2. Good-looking fighter at one point in time, but I think those beatings, I think they took their toll. I'm talking about more than one beating. Both beatings, of course, taking their toll, and the residual effects from combat sports, well, we just don't know. Bottom line is, this is what these guys had to say, both pre-weigh-in.
Now, all this stuff that he's talking about, he's about to gain weight. Okay, we both about to gain weight. What did that mean?
So, in other words, he started out by telling you, because he's always been a very big welterweight, and in fact, his last three fights took place at junior middleweight. He started out by saying, hey, I'm going to be bigger than you. Like, how did that beef start just now?
He talked about, I told him to make the weight. He made the weight. Now he's going to fill up, and I know I'm in a tough fight. I said, I don't care about none of that you're talking about. I'm going to fuck you up tomorrow.
Yeah. We are on, we're not on premium pay cable, Terrence. I know you're
bad,
in a
fight. He got me a little irritated. You got it.
You're in a fighting mood. I get it. Listen, for anyone out there watching, when there's a weigh-in, you never hold a fighter's attitude against them. They have been, and don't take anything they say. I won't take anything you say to me right now personally, bud, because they are in a fighting mood and they've been starving themselves. And there's Kell Brook. Terrence, Kell Brook, welcome to the show. Thank you for joining us.
Thank you for having me.
So Bud just told us that you started out by saying you were going to have a size advantage by ballooning up in weight after you just made the weight, and that he told you he doesn't care. How did that start, according to you, that beef we just saw on stage?
I don't think I started off by saying what size I'm going to blow up to. I think we were talking between before that. You know, and I just brought that in. I'm a naturally bigger fighter guy than him. He's wore these Air Force threes, I believe, all week, and to give yourself a bit an inch or two extra. I'm a naturally bigger guy. Come from lightweight up to welterweight. I've campaigned at middleweight, light middleweight. I'm a naturally bigger guy. You know, so.
But I don't give. I don't care.
I know you don't care. It don't matter.
5'9" or 5'8". What does it matter?
It don't matter. But listen, you know, there's weight categories for a reason. You're gonna feel. You know, listen. You know
you're
that
you're in my weight class now.
Yeah, I mean, you're in my weight class. This is my weight class.
This is my weight class.
Yeah, you started off lighter than this, so
it don't matter.
This is your weight class now. This has always been my weight class.
You're right. This is my weight class now. When I entered it, it's mine. It's mine.
All right, yeah.
It's mine.
Whatever, like it says, whatever it is. We both weighed on the championship limit. We're going to replenish, refuel. And the fans are in for a real firework night. That's all I can say. I'm ready. You know, Terrence is ready. Let's lay it on the line, you know. All I can say is the fans are in for a treat, because I know that he's up for it and he knows I'm up for it. So the fans are in for a treat tomorrow night.
Kell, how did you find making 147 pounds after three fights at 54?
I told you I'd make that. This is the easiest I've made it. I told you it's the easiest I've made it because I've been prepared for this fight. You know, so there's no issue. I've been fueling myself good in training sessions. This is going to be the best version of me. So if he's thinking that I'm over the hill, this is the best version because I've been fueling myself through every session, you know, and I've come in bang on the limit. I've done everything professional for this fight because this is shit or bust for me. So I know 100% Kell Brook in there is going to take that title. So I'm giving it all, everything, you know, and I've prepared unbelievably well.
Just make sure you write down all your words that you're saying.
Listen, I've got no excuses. I'm 100% ready for this fight.
Kell Brook and, of course, Terrence Crawford talking up tonight's fight on ESPN, ESPN Plus. Bottom line is, it's a fight worth watching. Of course, do we have a faded and a beaten warrior going up against a guy that's at the top of his game, or do we have a guy that's jumped up a couple weight classes going up against a guy that's maybe coming down in weight? And, of course, there's some way to meet there in the middle as far as talent and miles on the body. We'll find out tonight. Last week, I got to ask Boxing's PhD about this because he knows a little bit about, of course, Cuban heavyweights. Talking about King Kong Ortiz, Luis King Kong Ortiz, now 32-2, 27 kills. needed just 45 seconds to take out a guy by the name of Alexander, not so great Flores, now 18-3. Was that the real deal or was that some type of scam, Sock?
Well, I'm sure most of our audience knows that Flores translates to flowers. And Mr. Flores laid down like a flower. That was a dive. That was a dive worthy. Listen, it made Greg Louganis blush. That was, you know, it is what it is, man. I mean, you know, it's sad. I wish the commission would investigate the legitimacy of it. I heard Lennox Lewis trying to justify saying the floating rib or something ridiculous. That shot is not dropping a grown man, especially a professional fighter.
The floating rib? This is a new one. Wait a second. I've been around boxing a little bit. I don't ever remember a floating rib. My ribs never floated. You know, maybe some of the ribs I hit floated.
Listen, if you got a floating rib, you shouldn't be in the ring. You know, that was crazy. I mean, I say that, Bruce Seldon and Malik Scott, the last three great dives, you know, when Malik Scott fought Deontay Wilder, those probably the three best dives in the heavyweight division in the last 20 years. And Clifford Atien also. He gets honorable mention.
Okay, you know,
crazy.
Okay, let's take it from dives. Let's take it to dive from dives to predictions here. I'm putting you on the spot here. We've got a guy that's unbeaten against a guy that's lost two fights. Of course, there's some advantages for Kell, allegedly in size, maybe in experience, and of course, size. Size matters in two things, pornography and combat sports. This is boxing. And then you've got the other guy who's unbeaten. Really has fought a decent slew of fighters, but nothing considered Hall of Famerish or anything like that. I mean, when the fact he's spent his last couple of years calling out Manny Pacquiao doesn't say a whole lot about Terrence Crawford. Now, Crawford's admitted he hasn't fought a 5-star opponent yet. He's taken on Kell Brook tonight. He's not really a five. Or is Kell Brook a 5-star opponent?
I think at one point he was. You know, in boxing, it's not necessarily who you fight, but when you fight them. And as we all know, the MVP, the most valuable person of a promotional company is the matchmaker. If this fight happens pre-Golovkin, I think Kell Brook is a big favorite, you know, because like we was said earlier, he's the natural welterweight. But he is a fighter that has been busted up, you know. He fought Golovkin gallantly. I mean, he chased the money, he chased the glory. I think it's probably more glory than money because, I mean, he could have easily made easy paydays in England fighting his mandatories and whatnot, but, you know, he chased glory for Golovkin. Actually had his moments in that fight, but his face was rearranged, literally. And then about 9 months later, and he fought Errol Spence. And Errol Spence, the fresher fighter, you know, once again, matchmaking, okay. You know, his team, Al Haymon, took him.
Yeah, real
you know,
quick, Sock, right with, Sock running up, mm-hmm. running up on a hard break here. Give Devin Haney a grade last week.
Ooh, wow. You got to do better than that, son. I mean, a grade, I got to send him to summer school. And I know we're only in November.
Thank you.
But that, he didn't impress me at all. You got to take out a 40-year-old.
Didn't really drop. I mean, the bottom line, he was talking about four knockdowns. I don't think he got one. At the end of the night, though, he was a winner. Of course, now 25-0, takes his place in the upper echelon of the lightweight division with an asterisk next to him. Of course, he is the email champion. Sock, you are the PhD of boxing. I thank you so much for your time. We feel honored each week to have you here, bro.
Pedro, the honor and the pleasure is mine sharing the airwaves with you, sir. Have a great
you
weekend.
The great Socrates Palmer. You are tuned to Ring Talk live worldwide.
Now, more of Ring Talk with Pedro Fernandez.
I'm getting tired of people running from me in the ring. Mike Tyson, Holyfield, you a bunch of bums. Stand up and be a man and fight a real fighter.
You know, I remember cutting an interview live on national television. I actually went around the world on FNN Sports. Wow, that was 1989. We were in Galveston, Texas. George Foreman had just beat up J.B. Williamson, the former light heavyweight, a cruiserweight title holder. Moving up, of course, George on the comeback trail, trying to grapture that world heavyweight championship a second time. Of course, this was before his ill-fated fight with Evander Holyfield. Of course, he would lose that one and then come back and knock out Michael Moore a few years later. The bottom line is history. Ring Talk Live Worldwide, we'll get to it in just a second. Now, let's touch on the world of mixed martial arts. We're going to talk about the UFC, of course. UFC Fight Night going down the 7th, of course, at the Apex Center in Las Vegas, Nevada. Glover Teixeira, one of the not-so-good-looking guys in the world of mixed martial arts. I'm kidding. He's got some ears I don't like. You know, listen, those guys get those MMA ears, those cauliflower ears, and they just look gnarly. I don't know if I told you, one time I was standing next to Randy Couture doing some television, the former UFC light heavyweight and heavyweight champion. I was standing next to him, and his ear was so mangled that I couldn't stand on that side of him and broadcast. I started the broadcast or the tape event, and then I said I had to switch sides. And the producer didn't get it. The producer said, what do you do? I said, let me change sides. I'd rather have you know that. Let me change sides. That's why I had to change sides. That ear was like nasty, gnarly. Anyway, Glover Teixeira stopped Thiago Santos. Of course, both UFC veterans to an extent, no doubt about that. Both come to us from Brazil. Submission rear naked choke. 149 into round number 3. Andrei Arlovski, the former world heavyweight champion, according to the UFC title holder, beat Tanner Boser, a unanimous nod across the board, 29-28. He was a 3-1 underdog there. Outside of that, the rest of the card was sort of ho-hum, except for the fact that Jan Izoen beat Claudia Gadella, an unanimous nod, 29-28. That was a close fight. You know, chicks always give it up. I mean, I don't mean it that way, but chicks always give it up when it comes to the world of the UFC and the world of MMA. I've never seen a dull women's MMA fight. They come out and they go 100 miles an hour, or they go as fast as they can because they know they've got something to prove, not only to themselves, but to everybody watching. Because, you know, when people tune in, oh, God, girls are going to fight. Oh, God, I don't want to like girls. Stuff like, you know, that's the attitude, right? And then you see, whoa, they've got skills. I mean, they've got skills, man. Give the women their props. Bottom line is women making a move in the world of mixed martial arts, unlike the world of boxing. Why don't women make a move in the world of boxing? Why aren't they entertaining? The size of the gloves. I mean, if you're going to put the same size of a glove on a woman as you are on a man at 147 pounds, guess what? She's not going to be able to get the leverage and the power on a punch that the man can get on it. It's just, it ain't going to happen, okay? And, of course, in the world of mixed martial arts, they've got 4-ounce gloves, and that basically says everybody's a puncher. I mean, you get hit with a 4-ounce glove with the wrapping basically all around just the knuckle and the wrist. Guess what? You're probably going to go somewhere. Those gloves hurt, folks. I wouldn't even want to be thinking about getting hit by that. Bottom line is another card tonight on ESPN Plus. USC is going with another card from Vegas, Paul Felder, a lightweight contender going against Rafael Dos Anjos, a former lightweight champion. Of course, he's from down under. I'm talking about Brazil. Abdul Razak in a co-featuring versus Chaos Williams. They're going to do a catch weight at 172.5. Evidently, one guy didn't make weight there. And, of course, there's a women's strawweight fight on the card. Ashley Yoder is going to take on Miranda Granger. These women really hook it up. No doubt. I mean, you got to give women their props in the world of mixed martial arts. They come to fight, man. They come to fight. You know what? Listen, I mean, think about this. When you look at women's boxing, and right now, look at women's boxing. I mean, Clarissa Shields, she's called like the best ever in this kind of stuff. What's good about Clarissa Shields? She can box a bit. Yeah, she won some amateur titles, and I mean, you got to give her some props. But as a professional fighter, she brings nothing to the dance. I mean, absolutely nothing to the dance. She can't punch. And if you can't punch, what are you doing in a ring? I mean, not too many people have succeeded in the world of combat sports without being able to instill fear in somebody. In other words, I wouldn't be afraid of Clarissa Shields outboxing me, because she's not going to hurt me outboxing me. But, you know, you worry about getting a knockout. So what I'm trying to tell you is that Clarissa Shields is there to be taken. Somebody said she was the greatest female fighter of all time the other day, and I almost wanted to puke. But the bottom line is I'll leave that as it is. Anyway, UFC rocking and rolling tonight, of course, as well as Terrence Crawford and Kell Brook going in that main event on ESPN. So ESPN, if you've got the app, you got it going on. I mean, you've got ESPN, you got it going on. You got boxing and USC both tonight on ESPN. And guess what? If you just paid for the app, you're not paying for the fights. Check out some boxing history. November 12th, 1982. It was the Orange Bowl, Florida. I mean, one hell of a fight, no doubt about that. I mean, they really did their thing. I'm talking about, of course, Aaron Pryor and Alexis Arguello. Both guys have passed on. Of course, Alexis Arguello, the three-division champion, 126, 130 pounds, then 135. Of course, that was probably his peak in my mind. And, of course, beating Jim Watt for the championship in 1980 at 135 pounds, defending that title a few times against some so-so type of guys. Nobody was no big names there. And, of course, he had to step up to 140. He wanted that fourth title. And to beat Aaron Pryor, this was a big challenge for him. But going into that fight, there were demons – there were devils working in the Aaron Pryor corner. And I'm not sure that Aaron Pryor was part of this, but then again, I think about it, maybe how could he not be part of it? Because I'll tell you why. This is the way it went down, okay? They wrapped Aaron Pryor's hands. They wrapped his hands once in some light wrapping. And then they wrapped it again in plaster of Paris, okay? And then they wrapped it again in some light wrappings. And then they had the inspector come and inspect the hands. And the guy says, oh, yeah, the hand wraps are good. The hand wraps are good. Then they sprayed Pryor's hands, so I've been told, with water, and this made the plaster of Paris get hard. In other words, those nice little soft, you know, wraps that he had around his hands are supposed to protect his hands. Well, they're now casts. On that cast, you know, when you break your arm, I'm talking C-A-S-T-S, cast, okay? It's like a brick, okay? And you look at that fight and you watch how Arguello was busted up the way he was. He had never been busted up in close to, what, 80 fights before that? Never been busted out. I mean, fighting with 4 ounce gloves down there in the south of the border in South America and in Mexico. I think he fought with 4 ounce gloves. I think he defended a 126 pound title. He told me with a 4 ounce glove at one point in time. So, I mean, think about that. He's fighting with 4 ounce gloves. He never gets marked up, yet he fights Aaron Pryor and gets destroyed. And then what I think the telltale sign on that one was what, you know, it would be not too soon, not too much later where Panama Lewis, who was Aaron Pryor's corner man that night, was caught taking the padding out of Luis Resto's gloves and wrapping his hands in plaster of Paris for that Madison Square Garden card, June of 1983, of course, topped by Roberto Duran beating Davey Moore. But that was a crime. Of course, I thought it was like attempted murder. That's what they should have been charged with. I think they were charged with assault. But both guys went to jail. I'm talking about Luis Resto and Panama Lewis. But the fight with Pryor and Arguello was the prior November down at the Orange Bowl. There was no athletic commission per se. The Florida Athletic Commission was like impotent, to say the least. I mean, they didn't have any power. And people say to me, whoa, man, you talk a lot of smack. You know, you're trying to bring the guy down because he beat your guy. I said, listen, both these guys were my friends. Both Aaron Pryor and Alexis Arguello. I had relationships with both these guys. I consider them both nice men when they weren't on drugs. When they're on drugs, it was a different story. But the bottom line is, there was no dog in prior in this one. It's just the way it was. And this is the way Panama Lewis did things, okay? And taking the stuffing out of Pryor's gloves, people say to me, how can you say that? I said, okay, show me the gloves. And they say, what? I said, well, show me the gloves. Where are the gloves? I don't know where the gloves are. Exactly. The gloves disappeared before the fight was called. In other words, before that ring announcer, whoever it was, and I said, the time and the round and that kind of good stuff. And the November 1982 card, of course, before I announced the decision, the gloves had disappeared. Pryor's hands were wrapped, but the wraps were still on, but the gloves had disappeared, okay? The reason why the gloves disappeared, because Bill Miller went looking for them. That was Arguello's agent. He wanted to see the gloves. The gloves weren't to be found. Of course, Arguello's agent, Bill Miller, I think he sort of put the tip, to Billy Collins' father that something might be amiss with the gloves. Of course, Collins' father went after the gloves. After the Quilly Collins Luis Resto fight in June of 1983, found that he was touching knuckles. So the bottom line is, you know, he wrapped his hands in cast and he took the padding out of the gloves. I think Arguello was beaten up that way in November of 1982. And as far as the special bottle is concerned, I'm going to settle this one forever. Okay. The special mix, the one I mix, this kind of stuff. And that's what I keep hearing when people say to me, you know, the Aaron Pryor or Alexis Arguello fight, it was all boils down to the special bottle. Yeah, that may have had something to do with it, but I got news for you. When you're beating on somebody with your bare hands and they're wrapped in cast, plaster of Paris pack cast, you're going to do some damage like that. There's just no doubt about that. At the end of the day, Arguello was damaged forever. He never recovered psychologically from that. He just never did. I think the fact that he went out there and he got himself in the best physical condition he can get into as a boxer, but he just wasn't strong enough, I think, to deal with Pryor at 140. As for the special bottle in the mix, what was it? It wasn't peppermint schnapps. That's what he tried to tell people originally. It was peppermint schnapps. No, what he did was he found some asthma pills, and he ground up these asthma pills, and he ground them up, and he made them into the water, ground them up into the water, and he swished them all up and made this water real powerful. So when Pryor drank the water, he immediately got this asthma drug into his system, which gave him more oxygen at the time. Bottom line is he was able to come off that stool after that big right hand in the 13th round, come off that stool in the 14th round, and stop Alexis Arguello in a big surprise to a lot of people. But at the end of the night, was that size? Did that boil down to size? Did Arguello just go up too much, or did the prior cheat and Arguello go up too much? That's probably what it was. You are tuned to Ring Talk Live Worldwide. You're inside looking to the world of boxing, MMA. We'll continue with the story history. Of course, November 13th, 1982. Man, remember when Riddick Bro used to appear on the show all the time when he was a kid, a big fat kid. As an amateur, and then, of course, as a professional. I remember in 1988 at the Olympic trials, we were in Concord, California. I think he had won the trials, and, of course, he would go on to lose to Lennox Lewis in the Olympic finals, Olympic gold medal finals 1988. But Riddick Bro was a fat kid in Concord, California. Jack Fisk, I think he was like 80 years old or 78 years old, something like in his 70s. The retired HBO, a retired San Francisco Chronicle boxing writer, Hall of Famer, okay? So he goes, do you really think you're going to make it to the gold medal like fat like that? No, he didn't say like in that kind of condition. Because, you know, he was sitting there on a desk after a fight and his belly was hanging over his cup. And talking about Riddick Bowe, of course, a former world heavyweight champion. And Jack Fisk called it just like it was. And then, you know, Riddick took offense to that. But Riddick's problem was in his life discipline. I'll never forget him being on my show and him telling me about his house being remodeled. I said, oh, you remodeled your house, Riddick? I said, oh, yeah, I got it going on, Pedro. I said, tell me about it. He goes, well, I had a kitchen built in my bedroom. I said, huh? He goes, yeah, I had a kitchen built in my bedroom. I'm saying to myself, this is a dude that's got weight issues to begin with, and he's got a kitchen built in his bedroom. I don't think that sounds good as far as conditioning and being slim and maintaining your type of physical edge to be a heavyweight champion. I knew that was a little amiss. Of course, and then we did a show from Lake Tahoe, Nevada. Lake Tahoe, he was training for one of the big fights down there in Vegas, and, of course, he was coming down from 300 pounds. A guy would go up to 300 pounds each time and come down to 250, 245 and look pretty good, but you know, you can't push that weight as you grow older. He kept trying to do it. He was a fat kid as a teenager and ended up being a fat guy as a heavyweight pro. I remember after the heavyweight championship, after his loss, of course, the fights with Holyfield and that kind of good stuff, after his prime was gone, I did a comeback fight with him for promoter Tony Holden in Mills Lane. Let's Get It On Boxing is what that was called. We were in Miami. They call it Miami. It's called Miami is the way it's spelled. But Miami, Oklahoma. And Riddick Bowe was going to fight some stiff by the name of Pedro Fernandez or Scott Cuddy or some hobo like that. Bottom line is the guy looked across the ring, wasn't much across the ring, but Riddick Bowe wasn't much at that point in time either. He was close to like 300 pounds. I mean, he had a big old belly, so I didn't know what to do, and I'm the ring announcer. So, Riddick comes over to me and goes, tell everybody I'm 261 pounds. I said, yeah, right. I can't tell anybody you're 261. There's no way you're 261. No way, no how. Bottom line is Riddick Bowe on the 13th, won the undisputed world heavyweight champ with a unanimous nod over Las Vegas, in Las Vegas over the real deal, Evander Holyfield. All three judges saw it for Riddick Bowe. You are tuned to Ring Talk Live Worldwide.
Now, more of Ring Talk with Pedro Fernandez.
Man, I could listen to this song all day. Talk about Mary Wells, of course, recording the Motown Studios, Grandview Boulevard, Detroit, Michigan, Motown, baby, Hitsville, USA. Tonight's boxing odds. Wow, Kell Brook, plus 1,000, plus 1,000. He's a 10-1 underdog. Bottom line is Terrence Crawford looking like 13-1 if you want to bet him. So bottom line is at the end of the day, you know, this is a one-sided fight as far as the odds makers are concerned. But then again, a fortnight ago, they thought that Teofimo Lopez was a 4.5 or 5-1 underdog to Vasyl Lomachenko, and he was going to lose going away, and that didn't happen, did it? But the bottom line is a different fighter in Kell Brook, of course, than Teofimo Lopez. He was an undefeated. He's been busted up. Plus 925 on one odds maker. minus 1300 is Terrence Crawford on the other end of that. Bottom line is Danny Garcia, of course, and Earl Spence can hook it up for the one of the WBI, forget even what title is, but 147-pound title. Danny Garcia, plus 360 underdog. And, of course, Earl Spence, a minus 450 favorite. You know, in the old days, we used to do fights that were closer than that. In other words, if a fight was like 4-1, you got 4-1 both ways. You didn't get 3.5 to 1-1. It's sort of like they're taking a whole point away here from you. I don't know what's going on. I guess that's the sports books of today. And, of course, November 22nd is the Danny Garcia Earl Spence card. And November 28th, Danny Jacobs, a 30-1 favorite over Gabriel Rosado. I thought Rosado could fight a little bit better than that, but no. 15-1 is what you're going to get if you want to bet Rosado. It's 30-1 if you want to bet Daniel Jacobs. That's not too cool. Mike Tyson and Roy Jones. Mike Tyson minus 180 in an exhibition, of course, going down November 28th for us. Roy Jones plus 150. I don't know. Can you bet on an exhibition? Are exhibitions for real? They were when I fought. You are tuned to Ring Talk Live World. I wouldn't let nobody get out of the ring without knowing they were in the ring with me. I don't care if it was an exhibition or not. Anyway, bottom line is you've been tuned to Ring Talk Live Worldwide. 37 plus years now, you're inside looking at the world of boxing, MMA. My producer, back in the city by the bay, the incomparable Scott Cuddy, I thank you so much for tuning in. Don't forget the Sunday edition of Ring Talk Live Worldwide comes to you at 11 a.m. Pacific time. That's 2 p.m. Eastern time. On Sunday, we'll have the Godfather, retired HBO Godfather, Larry Merchant in the house, no doubt about that. You are tuned to Ring Talk Live Worldwide. You'd be doing a million things right now, but you listen to Ring Talk Live Worldwide, and I thank you so much for that. Until then, peace, love, and lots of respect. Hey,